listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf. We interview creative minds and share their ideas. Here's your host, Annette Tour.
Welcome to the East County Magazine Bookshelf. Today, it is truly my honor to introduce my guest, Bruce Givner. Givner was only 21 years old at the time, working as an intern at the Democratic National Committee's Watergate offices. He is best known for his role on the evening of the Watergate burglary. His presence substantially delayed the break-in and indirectly led to the eventual arrest of the burglars. He is an American attorney holding a major in history from UCLA, and he went on to study law at Columbia University, specializing in tax law at New York University. He has been featured in many books and articles, such as Harper's and the McCord Files. Today, I'm excited to talk to you about his book, My Watergate Scandal Tell-All, How I Unwittingly Caused This Historic Event. Welcome to the show, Mr. Bruce Givner. It's such an honor to have you here.
Thank you very much, Annette, for that lovely introduction.
You're welcome. In your book, you share your memories of your time as an intern before the Watergate scandal. Can you share a few of those memories? What were your responsibilities and experiences during that period?
Well, the first thing I did when I got to DC was I bought a motorcycle. I had one at UCLA, and it was pretty helpful getting around. DC is a pretty small place, and on a motorcycle, you could make it around there very quickly. When I showed up at the DNC on Monday of that week, which was the fateful week, it was the first week I was there that the break-in occurred. When I showed up at the DNC that first week, because I had a motorcycle, they used me as a messenger, as a courier, and I was taking packages up to the Hill. I went into the offices of senators and members of the House of Representatives. So that was pretty cool for me. It was very enjoyable that first week.
That sounds pretty impressive. I wonder if you were wondering what were in those documents that you were.
Yes. Yep. You always wondered, didn't you? They were sealed and you had to. People had to sign on to them and stuff. It wasn't terribly, it was just a little string, basically, but wasn't supposed to look in, and I did not.
Fascinating. The incident of burglars watching you, making free long-distance phone calls is quite intriguing. Can you elaborate on that story?
Well, in these old days, there was something called a Watts line, which is a wide area telephone service. And there were national ones and there were relatively local ones. And since I was from Ohio, my family had moved to LA when I graduated from high school. I decided that first week I was going to take advantage of the free phone calls. And I stayed late that Friday night. People cleared out about 7. The last people were there. And so I went and started using the phone call, the phone line. And I was calling people in Ohio and I was calling people in LA. And it was fun. You know, I got to talk to, you know, friends, girlfriends from Ohio, from L.A. And I think I was done about midnight. I was there in the offices and you couldn't leave the offices without having a key to get back in, which, of course, I didn't have because I wasn't important. And the bathroom was out there in the hallway. So I couldn't leave to go use the bathroom. So I walked out onto the balcony overlooking Virginia Avenue, and they had planters there. So I took a pee into one of the planters facing Howard Johnson's, which is where the burglars were. So nobody ever mentioned that they saw that kid take a pee in the planter. So I was very happy with that.
I remember reading that in your book and I was laughing. I mean, using the flower boxes for a bathroom break adds a touch of humor to this tension-filled narrative. Your book provides unique insights into the Watergate scandal. What motivated you to write a tell-all book, and what do you hope readers will take away from your perspective?
Well, what motivated me is my publicist, Cherie Kerr. I mean, she said, you know, Bruce, it's the 50th anniversary in 1972 to 2022. You really should write this. And oh, by the way, look at how current events are going. By the way, I'm not going to make any political comments. She was just saying, hey, look what's going on. And so had I been forced to write it myself, it would not have happened. So basically, I sent emails to Cherie and I talked to her a lot, and she wrote the book. I mean, I didn't really write it. So it's my stories, but a lot of it is Cherie's recollection of the culture of the time. I don't think my story's that interesting. She thinks it is. So it's very much her book about what happened to me. Both at the break-in, but there was stuff that happened later. I mean, I was interviewed by the head of the Republican Senate Watergate Committee, Fred Thompson, who later became a senator. and later became a TV and a movie star. He was in, can't remember what the name of that movie was, but in a very big blockbuster movie. And he was a frequently appeared in some very long running TV show. So
was it All the President's Men? Was it that?
I wish I remembered or not. If you've got a computer, you can look it up. But Fred Thompson was, I mean, he became quite the, you know, TV and movie personality. But he wasn't at the time. He was just a lawyer on the Republican Senate Watergate Committee. My takeaway, you know, primarily was just the very, very sad what happened to Frank Wills, the guard who discovered the tape twice, not once. The first time before he and I walked across the street to the Howard Johnson's to get milkshakes and cheeseburgers. The second time, obviously, we went back and he found the tape again. And that's what motivated him to call his supervisor, which brought the police there, which resulted in the arrest. But I mean, he was just abused. There was a guy who promised to help him get speeches and he died in poverty. And it was very sad. That, I mean, that just was awful.
That is so unfortunate to hear and tragic about Frank Wills, that despite his pivotal role, he faced a difficult life of poverty. Very sad indeed. Why were you called the mystery man?
Well, the author of the article in the New York Times asked Frank Wills about me, and Frank didn't know anything about me, and he certainly wasn't involved in any of the news about the event. And the guy who wrote the article was lazy. He didn't look and see that I'd been interviewed by the Washington, D.C. police, the Secret Service, the FBI, the Senate Watergate Committee. So he just it was funny because the article was called Frank Wills, A Footnote to History. There was one footnote in the column in the entire article, and it was about the mystery man. So I was the footnote to the footnote to history. So I wrote him. I said, wait a minute. There was no mystery. I was interviewed by all these people. So he printed a retraction and they printed my article, my letter.
Can you describe the atmosphere and tension at the Watergate complex leading up to the scandal? How did your presence there change after the burglary incident?
So in the first week I was there, there was no real tension. We were doing what we were supposed to, the volunteers were doing what we were supposed to do, which was to put together the committee hearings around the country. The way the platforms are assembled is by people testifying. There would be one hearing, I'm making this up because I don't remember, in St. Louis. There'd be one in Michigan. There'd be one in California. So I helped reserve the rooms and make sure the speakers were ready and they knew how long they had to talk. There wasn't really any tension. Things were just going business as usual. And after the burglary incident, no one really knew anything for the time period. It didn't really explode until quite a lot later. The next year, I was at Exeter College in Oxford on another summer program. And I remember going downstairs in the basement and watching TV, which was the Senate Watergate hearings. And so it really took a while to get going.
In your book, you discuss the impact of the Watergate scandal on political and public perceptions. How do you believe this event has shaped the course of American history and politics?
Well, I want to be very careful what I say. So let me just say that briefly, at the time, a president's criminal acts had consequences. And that's all I think I'm going to say on the topic.
Okay, that's fair. Could you elaborate on the significance of the break-in and subsequent events in relation to the role of media and investigative journalism during that time, particularly from your perspective on how these events transformed investigative journalism?
Well, that was 5 decades ago, and there was, you know, there were a lot of newspapers. I mean, the LA Times was a big newspaper. It had offices around the world. Well, that's not the case. The LA Times is holding on by its fingernails. If you read the LA Times today, a lot of those stories are just from Bloomberg. I mean, they don't really have their own bureaus anymore. If they do, it's not obvious to me. Mm-hmm. How many newspapers are there in this country today? The New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal. I don't know that there's a whole lot of other, I'm not familiar with every state. The decline of the LA Times shows you a lot about what there is in investigative journalism, because only the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, I'm sorry, those three, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, can really afford investigative journalism. So it's pretty bad all these years later. Most people get their news from MSNBC, CNN, Fox.
I agree with you. I think the decline of the newspapers, and now most people probably get their news from social media, unfortunately. Yep. What challenges did you face during the process of writing your tell-all book, both in terms of gathering accurate information and navigating potential legal or ethical considerations?
Well, in terms of gathering accurate information, I was really just relying on my own memory of, because that's what the book is. It's about Bruce, you know, what did I do? You know, what happened to me? Not really that much happened to me. I mean, there was one time I remember, I don't know if you remember, it's in the book. I got a call and this one journalist said that I think it's actually in here someplace, that I was a secret agent for the Republicans. And I went, really? That's okay. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
He said, well, you arrived right before the break-in. I said, well, that's absolutely true. He said, we think your ticket was paid for by the Republican National Committee. I said, lots of luck on that. So that was sort of interesting. But in terms of ethical considerations, I don't really have anything because I didn't know anything that was privileged. So it's not like, you know, again, I was just telling what happened to me while I was there. So.
Did you ever feel like your life was in danger, entangled in this scandal?
And that shows you the difference between then and now, doesn't it? Again, not making a political point, but people are a lot more active with their views nowadays, aren't they?
Americans surveyed after the Watergate scandal had less trust in government. Did the events surrounding the Watergate scandal influence your views on government transparency and accountability?
Well, I think my views are informed by what's going on in the world today. I mean, we've got the rise of autocrats. And I don't think this has anything to do with the United States. If you look around the world, you look at Viktor Orban in Hungary, you look at Recep Tayyip Erdogan in Turkey, and you look at, this might be too hot to say, Bibi Netanyahu in Israel. And there are others, without a doubt there. I'm not mentioning Vladimir Putin. That's probably dangerous to say. So yeah, I mean, the rise of the autocrats is pretty scary in this world, isn't it?
Yes, it is. What were your emotions as a young individual being involved in a pivotal moment of history and becoming entangled in a scandal that captured the entire nation's scrutiny?
Well, as I said, when I was there in D.C. at the time, there was really nothing happening. After D.C., I went down to Florida because that's where the convention was, and that was fun, but there was nothing going on as to the break-in. The following year, as I said, when I was in Oxford, it was there on TV, but nothing really had happened yet. Now, when I started law school at Columbia, I started getting interviewed. And that's when they called me to DC. But in terms of when it was blowing up, I was in law school. And let me tell you, when you're in law school, at least for me, it took every ounce of my being to survive law school. It was very, very difficult. So I didn't have a whole lot of attention going off to other things. There was the article in the school newspaper, which was entitled, "But for Him, Nixon Might Still Be President." So that was funny, interesting, but, you know, not a whole lot pierced inside of trying to go to school and survive in school. By the way, I had a professor of women in law. And the professor's name was Ruth. Guess the next two words I'm going to say. Ruth Ginsburg. She was my professor. 8 o'clock in the morning, I always fell asleep. She was the most boring professor.
Oh, my goodness.
Really smart, but boring as hell. Her husband, Marty Ginsburg, was a tax lawyer. One of the most brilliant. I mean, he was incredibly brilliant and a great public speaker and writer.
What unbelievable history. So you just mentioned that you were the only subject in Columbia Law School News, if not for him, Nixon Might Still Be President, by Jim Shaw. Do you think there would have been a Watergate scandal had you not stayed late to make these calls? Perhaps Nixon would have remained president?
Well, I think that I helped because I got Frank out. And then as soon as he got back, he had a fresh look at it. But on the other hand, you know, if you watched one of the TV specials, it said that they had already tried three times to break in, right? So if they'd missed that one, the fourth time, who knows? They might have gone back a fifth time and a sixth time until they were finally, successful. And maybe Frank wouldn't have been on duty. Maybe there would have been someone else who hadn't been as just acting within the course and scope of his job as Frank did. So I wish I could take some credit for it. But I'm not sure I can.
Well, you may have delayed the process, and sometimes it's just a perfect combination of events happening just to create the moment. Looking back, what lessons do you think we can learn from the Watergate scandal, and how can they be applied to contemporary political and social context?
I'm going to stay away from contemporary events. But certainly, you got to be careful when there's a tape recording going. When there's a tape recorder going, you better watch. And what I tell clients, by the way, as a tax lawyer, I said, whenever you enter a room, you should assume that you are being tape recorded. What I tell the young lawyers in the firm is when someone comes in, a client or potential client, you should assume that it's an undercover IRS Criminal Investigation Division agent, and they are recording you. You always have to be on your best behavior. When clients walk into my office and they say something I don't like, I say, that is criminal tax fraud. Because if there's someone listening to it, I want it to be clear that I told them that they can't do it. So, A, first of all, do the right thing. You want to do the right thing. And B, watch it. I mean, you don't know who's listening, who's tape recording, and I don't want to talk about current events such that.
Okay, that sounds fair. By the way, I just love, as I was reading the book, you had songs along the way, and it really took me back to that period. I actually listened to all those songs just to bring me back into that period of time. I thought it was just amazing. Is there anything that you would like your readers to know?
It may not look like it, but when I was at UCLA, we were riding our motorcycles an awful lot. And God, those were crazy times. And but for that motorcycle, I wouldn't have seen as much of DC as I did. It was really nice to be able to, I mean, I played golf at there was a golf course in downtown DC where you got to look over and see the Lincoln Memorial, and you got to see I mean, it was wonderful, the freedom. I don't know if I'd feel that good anymore, and I'm glad my kids never did it. When I was 18 and stupid, it was a lot of fun. So
Well, Mr. Givner, reading your book about the Watergate scandal was not only enlightening, but also quite a page turner. I'm truly grateful for the opportunity to have you on the show and to have learned so much about this important part of history. So I want to show everyone the book again. It is my Watergate Scandal Tell All.
Sheree Kerr's name is right there. Make sure everybody understands
Oh.
that the cultural references, the songs were largely Sheree.
Okay, so that's good to know. So, by Bruce Givner with Sheree Kerr. Thank you so much for being on the show, and
Thank
I
you for
wish you
inviting me, Nat.
success in your future endeavors.
Thank you. Have a lovely day.
Thank you, you too.